Blue Wire.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup, oh, blocked by James! It's over! Cleveland is a city of champions once again!
The Cleveland Cavaliers select Colin Sexton, Darius Garland.
Here comes Sexton, some rhythm.
And he got it, young ball continues to wear him out!
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network. I'm your host, Justin Rowan, coming back from my hangover. Blue Bombers have won the 107th Grey Cup. All that history, it is back, baby. Carter, thank you so much for filling in and giving me the night off. I needed it. Somehow I made it to work the next day on time. Don't ask me how. I impressed all of my coworkers. But you and Trevor did an absolutely phenomenal job for all our listeners. If you haven't checked out that podcast yet, we've said it a million times. Trevor is the smartest out of all of us. It is a blessing to have that guy on. And the analysis of the draft picks and how the Cavs young guys are doing so far was absolutely phenomenal. But as I mentioned, my co-host is here, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going, buddy?
Going good. How does it feel to be a champion again?
It feels so good. My bucket list is over. The only two teams I truly care about at this level are the Cavs and the Bombers. So for both of those teams to have ended their droughts, Cleveland, obviously 52-year drought, and Winnipeg here with the 29-year drought, to have both of those end, there's nothing that can compare to that.
You know, they say there's nothing quite like your first. How did your second title of your adult life feel?
So it's kind of like the first, because having it happen in my own city where I'm able to attend the parade, raid downtown after the championship and all that, one, it kind of made me a little jealous that I didn't get to do that with the Cavs, because that is just so much goddamn fun. But it is nice to have that kind of fresh angle, and the experience was just so awesome.
Well, I'm happy for you. I do, before, you know, and we can kind of continue our weekly segment called Justin Explains a Canadian Thing to Carter. Raid? I asked you if you wanted to hop on the pod on Monday or on Sunday night, and you said, we're going to raid downtown. Is that shorthand for riot?
It's essentially what I meant. It was nonviolent. It was absolutely nonviolent. But we have this main intersection in Winnipeg where no pedestrians are allowed there. It's like Cold War where all of it is like walled off. You have to go under in order to cross. So whenever anything happens sports related, we all jump the barriers and we shut down downtown. So that's what we did at Portage and Main. It was a lot of fun.
Arusta, I never know how to say it, in the chat, has a very important question for you. The real question is, which title was better?
I think Cavs was a little better. Just the sport I care about more, and the sport I know more. Like, my football fandom is true, pure, dumb fandom. I don't really know what I'm watching, but it's all shiny, and I like it.
I totally agree with this. Like, I think the Cavs title would be more meaningful, but I might potentially, if the Cowboys ever were to win the Super Bowl, I might have more fun with that because it's just pure fun. Like,
right.
You have to
be measured. And I mean, me crying alone in my apartment and then jumping on a podcast with you and others was great. But it's also cool to have like my place. So we had like 18 people here, and then we all went downtown. Like that experience is really cool to kind of have the camaraderie. And as I said, it kind of made me a little sad that I missed out with that, with the Cavs championship. But it still, even from a distance, was just so damn sweet.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Though obviously, I don't know what it's like to have my favorite football team win a title. Maybe someday.
The coolest part, too, the recipient of the MVP of the game, as well as most outstanding Canadian player, was born and raised and played high school and college football here in Winnipeg. So to see that, and for the first time ever for a person to win both awards, in the Grey Cup was really, really cool. There was five Winnipeggers on the team, so that added another level to it.
What a win for Peg City, Justin.
What a win. Unfortunately, the Cavs weren't able to kind of cap that off with a win over Brooklyn. That would have been sweet, as I'm just absolutely dying watching the Cavs with just another really good performance without Kevin Love. Weren't able to bring it home, and the curse of the Spencer Dinwiddie game winner.
That son of a bitch.
I know, like, there's always the saying, it couldn't have happened to a nicer guy. He seems like the nicest guy, and I want to like him so much, so I don't know why he keeps hurting this franchise.
Yeah, I think it is fair to say, with regards to Spencer Dinwiddie, who seems thoughtful, enterprising, smart, talented, fuck him.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
He is just such a consistent bummer to me, and I just don't want to deal with it anymore.
So, yeah, come on the pod, Spencer. Defend yourself.
Yeah. Come on the pod, coward.
But it was a good game. I really enjoyed it. There was a lot of things that I was kind of looking forward to seeing, and a lot of them kind of came to fruition. Love seeing Larry Nance have another good offensive game. He's been playing a lot better lately. Jetty Osman has been playing well. Darius Garland continues his good shooting from behind the arc. Up to 39% over his last seven games, and somehow has a higher three-point percentage for the season than Colin Sexton, which seemed impossible like a week or two ago.
Yeah, it's been really interesting seeing Larry Nance have that kind of slight uptick in production after a pretty rough stretch of games as they were just getting their ass kicked. Obviously Garland's jumpers is coming to form, and I know we're going to talk about that. And also Jetty Osman is starting to actually put his thumbprint back on the offense. So a lot of interesting trends that seem to be indicating progress, though I guess we're going to have to see. But where do you want to start? Do you want to start on Garland?
Yeah, I think let's start there. I think him and Kevin Porter Jr. are kind of two real bright spots lately. KPJ, we've talked about a million times before, but he really does seem to be getting better by the game. He does some really exciting things on defense, still fouling a little bit too much, but you can tell every single game he's picking up something from the night before and adding to what he's already done. And it's just so encouraging to see a guy that was kind of labeled as a project develop at the rate that he is. And then Darius Garland, shooting from three. He's taking over six shots a game from behind the arc. And we've talked about it before, but I think the confidence from that and the ways that that can open up his game, that's going to be the real thing for me moving forward, is whether he can translate the success from behind the arc to success within it, where he's no longer needing to, or passing up the open three, driving into the lane and throwing a turnover. I think once that shot starts to go in consistently and he continues taking it and the scouting report changes, it's really going to create opportunities for him and the rest of the offense.
Yeah, I think that this is getting closer to the way I would like to see him play. If you read Fedor's Gamer after the Nets loss, he mentioned that Boylan threatened to pull Garland after he passed up an open three when the Nets moved to the 2-3 zone. And he went out and responded by canning two in a row and forcing them out of the zone. So I think that's the kind of play you want to see. Like, obviously, like, it's hard with him because the numbers just still aren't there wide angle. I mean, 11 points, five turnovers, one assist, four of 10 shooting. Like, it's not exactly like the best numbers.
No, it's not.
But at least stylistically, he's getting closer to what I want him to play like. And I just think the more he pulls from three, the more he gets that reputation as a guy that you have to guard out there. And sometimes that matters more than actually being insanely efficient.
No, I completely agree. And we'd be a bunch of assholes if we went on the pod just a couple weeks ago and said, all I want is for him to take threes. If he just starts taking threes and getting that rate up to more acceptable levels, we'll live with the mistakes. We'll live with the growing pains. So now that he's doing it, it would be kind of rough to turn around and say, Well, the overall games still aren't that great. No, they're not. Yeah. But he's still, and he talked about this today. I saw Spencer Davies had a good video with him in practice where he was talking about how he's already played more games in the NBA than he did in college, considerably more. And there's an adjustment to that. He's lost some weight recently. You can tell that he's a little more spry out there. He's getting into game shape. And I thought you made a great point on the podcast with Trevor of he clearly has the vision. He can make spectacular passes. He needs to get used to what NBA defenders are capable of because they can close those gaps in an instant. And just learning what they can do, because he never even learned what college defenders could really do defensively. He's still seeing things at kind of that high school level. And it's great that he does have that advanced vision, but it's going to take some time for him to truly learn how to run an NBA offense, which is normal for the position.
Yeah, it was actually a Trevor point that I thought was really good is that, you know, he kind of mentioned that Sexton has the ability to make the passes, but doesn't have the vision to throw them. And right now, Garland has the vision to throw them, but doesn't know how to make them. And I would rather have the latter problem than the former, just because, you know, you can figure out the angles and the and kind of how much heat you have to put on the passes and stuff like that. It's way harder to teach CN stuff. And we've talked about this a lot. And ultimately, I do think he's going to grade out as at least a decent playmaker. And it's really just figuring out the scoring thing. And I think, I don't know. I guess my question for you is, if Garland, at the end of the year, we end up, like, what's the minimum output from Garland that has you go, by the end of the year, that has you thinking like, okay, this is a guy that I can kind of take stock in and take belief in as being a core piece of this team's future and not just hopefully he gets it figured out, you know, like not a guy you, what do you need from him not to be a player that you have to kind of make excuses for this offseason?
Yeah, that's a good question because I think with Sexton last year, what we're hoping from with him is for him to be an efficient scorer, plus defender at some point. And that's really the extent of it. I don't think there's any realistic hope that he's going to be able to run an offense. And that's okay because he's not a black hole. He's not somebody that's just going to pound the air out of the ball. He'll at least keep it moving and you can build an offense with that. With Garland, it's a little bit different because the expectation is for him to be a floor general of some sort. And he's shown an ability to do that. So I don't think the raw numbers matter as much, but I would like to see him maybe 15-5, doing that efficiently, taking threes at a good rate. If he wants to go ahead and score more, he can certainly do that. I have no problems with that. I'm not going to be mad at it. But I just want to see the decision-making improve. If I can see throughout the season, there is that progress where, okay, he's now throwing entry passes a little bit better. He's now making better decisions. He when to pull up, when to do the floater, when to dump it off. I just want to see that progress a little more than the raw numbers because I don't think the raw numbers are going to be spectacular this season. But the growth he's showing so far is a little bit encouraging to me.
Yeah, I think for me, it's like even more nebulous than 15-5. For me, it's like what I want from Darius Garland is to end the year knowing he is an NBA level scorer.
Yeah.
Like a good scorer in the NBA. And like, I don't need him to necessarily put up 20 points a game, but I need to see it a little more consistently by the end of the year. You know, I want to see him at 15-18 and a couple nights where he goes off and really shows it. Because that's what we're
getting flashes, right? We want to see it put together. And I mean, that's what you saw with Trae Young last year. Like the overall numbers, he didn't shoot well from three. They were underwhelming. But the good Trae Young was so spectacular that you're like, okay, this is what we want. This is who we drafted. This is what we want to see from him. So I think if you start to see those post-deadline flashes and those kind of explosive games from him, we want the high watermark to be good. I think that's the best way of putting it, is as long as there's a few of those high watermarks, it's going to lead you to be a little more encouraged heading into next year.
Yeah, I don't mind ebb and flow, but I do need some ebb to go along with that flow, you know, like, or flow to go with that ebb, I guess. Like I'm okay.
Yeah,
with
I don't know which way that would go. I liked it though.
Snake to my mongoose. I just think, like, ultimately what I need is, if he's going to have some rough patches, I'm okay with that. I also need to see some, like, really good stretches, like a 2 week stretch where he is just lighting things up, I think is enough to get me where I need to be in terms of belief in him moving in the next year. But short of that, I just think we're going to be shrouded in mystery, and you just don't want as much uncertainty as there still is around your fifth overall pick, you know? Even with all the mitigating factors that we've talked about, I just want to see just a little bit more that gets me feeling like, okay, this guy's going to figure this out and be good.
Yeah, I think that's a fair take. I mean, it doesn't take a whole lot for me to be optimistic on a guy.
No, we're cheap dates, man.
Yeah, absolutely. So the other half of the equation, when I mentioned earlier that Garland is now shooting like 3% better from three than Sexton, the other part of that is Colin Sexton's outside shot has kind of fallen off, which is a little bit concerning. We had a, let's call it heated or an enthusiastic discussion in our Discord, which again, if any of you want to join our Cavs Discord, where we talk Cavs and a whole lot of other things, you can send a screenshot of your review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. But we were discussing what this slump could mean, because obviously we're still dealing with small sample sizes. I think it's 750 attempts. A lot of the analytics people will say that's how long it takes for shooting numbers to normalize. We've seen outlier seasons. I still think the form is good with Sexton. I think that he's going to be a good shooter. But with Sexton having a rough night and Kevin Porter Jr. having a good night and continuing to show the growth, we raise the possibility of, hey, maybe in February when Jordan Clarkson's gone and we really need that scoring punch off the bench, maybe there could be a changing of the guard there. And that was kind of the source of a lot of that heated discussion there.
Yeah, I'm just not sure what to make of Sexton right now. And it's like, I think the reason you don't bench him is that is more about KPJ not being ready to be a starter than his lack of shooting. Like, yeah, Sexton can't shoot either, but he at least has a little bit more gravitational pull. I mean, when Sexton has the ball, you don't see guys drifting 10 feet off him like you do with KPJ right now.
Yeah, he also just has more experience in the NBA.
I mean,
we need that.
I mean, let's call it what it is. He's better than Kevin Porter Jr.
Yes.
And he's better than Darius Garland. So I do worry, and I think we talked about this on a couple pods ago, is like, I do get concerned with the message you send to your team when you're benching your best guard to play another rookie who's worse than him.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And the point I made, when I was kind of thinking out loud with this, my thought process was, hey, that's something to look for in potentially in February. If Kevin Porter Jr. continues to improve and this shooting slump, if it ended up being a real concern, then that might be something that the Cavs would entertain, which would also probably align with other changes to the starting lineup. We saw kind of the buzz out of camp was there's a decent chance that Dylan Windler, if he's as good as the Cavs seem to think he is, might take Jetty's spot in the starting lineup. And with him kind of being that low usage shooter, that maybe that opens things up for someone like Kevin Porter Jr., who's a little more slashing orientated. You'd hope at that point Darius Garland would be more comfortable from deep as well. But the thing with Sexton is we have already seen that this guy is a tireless worker. I want to clarify that I am also 100% on the Sexton bandwagon. I still think the most likely outcome for him is for him to be a sixth man, but that is a guy that absolutely works his ass off. We've seen him make dramatic changes to his game, and he's got an attitude that you just want to root for this guy. So if there ever was a change to that starting lineup and you were moving him back, it's not to bench him. We're not putting him in street clothes. You're probably moving him from about 30 minutes to about 27, which was what Jordan Clarkson was averaging last season. And it's strictly stylistically to kind of give a punch to a unit that's been struggling and for a lineup that makes a little bit more sense in adding some length with Kevin Porter Jr. and Darius Garland. He's still going to be a part of this team, and I think he's earned the right over the next 2-3 months here to try to keep that starting spot.
I don't know, man. The reality of the situation is I just don't think you can do it unless you trade Jordan Clarkson.
Oh, no. You have to trade Jordan Clarkson this season. I'm saying that just flat out. I like Jordan Clarkson. I think he can add something to any bench unit. I think he's an above-average bench player. You have to trade him this season. 100% you have to trade him this season because the draft is so guard-heavy. We already have so many damn guards, and we need to be on to the next phase of the team, even if Clarkson being traded hurts the team in the short term, which it absolutely will. We will be a worse team when we trade Jordan Clarkson.
Yeah, Mets Rule 4, Cy in the chat just said, what's the lowest return you would expect or want for Clarkson?
So this is a tough thing. The precedent for lesser players like Rodney Hood, Alec Burks, Kyle Korver at this stage of his career, even George Hill when he is all broken and stuff, they got good returns. We got first for those guys. And I'd probably expect that for Clarkson, but the market might be different this year. So it's so hard to gauge. Ultimately, I'm just listing offers until the deadline and taking whatever the best one is.
I think the market is not going to be for a first, even for the price of taking on a worse contract, just because free agency class is just so bad. And I get that there's some concern about the cap dropping because of China, but even
I was going to say the Daryl Morey situation, Carter. Now hanging on to that.
Yeah, that's fair. Even so, I don't know. I just feel like 2 seconds is plenty for an expiring contract in a league that I don't think values expiring contracts that much. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, it's about moving to the natural order. I do think, I don't know, it just kind of depends on how the rest of the roster starts to look. Because mm-hmm. if you're just trading Clarkson out and not getting much back, then, you know, maybe you do just move Sexton to the bench just to give that unit some structure.
Right. And the other move that I would advocate for is moving Chetty Osmond to the bench.
I'm less interested in that right now. Okay. Especially if you're going to move Sexton to the bench, I think the part of, and we're going to save this for later, so I don't want to dive too far into it, but mm-hmm. I do think part of why Jetty's played better the last couple games is that he's getting to handle the ball a little bit more. Yeah. And I think there's room for him to do that on this starting lineup. If you take Sexton out.
Yeah, Jetty to the bench is another situation like Sexton where I would advocate for them getting almost the same number of minutes, but you would change it up in terms of where they're starting. I do think that second unit does need some initiating, and while Jetty can't create off the dribble against a lot of starters, I think there's more opportunity for him to do that against reserves, and I really think that second unit does need some playmaking. With Jetty, it's a little more interesting because, like, right now, I could have seen a case for starting Alphonso McKinney just as a low usage guy and giving Jetty the same number of minutes. But until Darius Garland figures it out, I do agree with you that there is room for him to be an initiator on the perimeter and to create for other guys. But as the season progresses and we're starting to look at what changes to the rotation there may be, if Darius Garland starts moving forward and continuing to progress as we expect, that might open up minutes. That might open up or minutes where you could probably benefit with Jetty being on the bench so he could continue having those opportunities because Garland's starting to absorb some of them.
The only thing that with this is, and this is like putting the cart way before the horse, so maybe this is a stupid thing to even talk about right now, but when Trevor and I were talking on Sunday night, we were kind of talking about how Garland's in this unusual spot where he actually gets to play with guys who are going to command the ball, and how it is going to trial by fire force some off-ball skills. And I would be hesitant to take ball handlers off the floor and accidentally give Garland that tunnel vision of the do-everything tunnel vision that we kind of see other young point guards develop when they're on bad teams where they're the only play initiator.
Right. And to clarify, I did say until basically February, I would continue until the trade deadline, I would continue to give Colin Sexton opportunities because he has earned the right to try and establish himself as the starting shooting guard. And in my opinion, it would take a lot to dethrone him. I think even if he continues struggling like this, if Kevin Porter Jr. just continues having these flashes where he looks good or whatever, that's not enough to take Sexton out of that starting spot. You keep him there, absolutely. Like, Kevin Porter Jr. would need to take a considerable leap in season, and Sexton would probably need to continue playing like he is right now or regressing a little bit.
To be clear, I'm saying that's my only concern with going to it. If you were to move Jetty and Sexton.
And Sexton, right.
Because now you're taking a lot of playmaking off the floor and saying, Garland, go run the show alone.
But I mean, Kevin Porter Jr. isn't exactly shy to put the ball on the floor. And so far, he's been a better shot creator for others than Sexton. He actually has surprisingly good vision. I was really encouraged by him, especially last night. That was really great to see.
Yeah, he's another one in the same realm of Garland where his assist numbers are not good. But when I watch him play, he does make the right... He makes interesting reads, I think would be the way to frame it. They're not always good reads, but they're interesting reads. And that sounds like I'm splitting hairs, and I am, but I do think he has some playmaking skills as on the wing.
This is where I would absolutely transition to an ad read if we had one this week, but we do not.
Oh, wow. Thanks for that's a real peel. But we really peel the curtain back on our ad reads. I wonder if people like that.
I think they do.
If they feel like we're not lying to them.
You know what? We are honest. Like we talk about when we're actually enjoying a product and when how we feel about it. I think that's a big thing.
Yeah, also, like you just love Twitch feed.
Yeah, absolutely. They do not ship to Canada. Otherwise, I'd be swiping all day. But our Twitch feed seems to think that they like the ad read discussion. So we do appreciate that instant feedback.
Well, that's nice. I do want to continue to talk about Jetty a little bit because on the last pod you were on before you were a Winnipeg champion, we were kind of talking about kind of starting that Jetty discussion of like, he's been pretty freaking invisible and he's not shooting well. He's not defending well. He's just not there. He's just isn't looking like someone who's good at basketball right now. And then the last 2-3 games for him have been a total light switch moment. And not sure if you got a chance to read Chris Fedor's profile of the conversation Jetty had with John Boeheim. But if you didn't, basically, Boeheim kind of realized that he needed to get Jetty involved in the offense as a play initiator and finisher again. And that the idea of Jetty as a 3-and-D kind of role player among the other high usage starters far outpaced the reality and how that worked for him. And even with an absolute clunker from the field against the Blazers where he shot 2-for-11, his engagement and involvement has basically tripled the last 2-3 games.
Yeah, the last three games have been very good, and I did read Fedor's piece there, and it lined up with what we were saying too, where you have to get him a few more touches. As much as we like to compare him to the small forward Tristan, there is some need to draw plays and to get him involved and get him touches to keep him active.
Can pass. We've talked about this. We talked about moving him to that second unit on, I want to say last Wednesday or Thursday. Mm-hmm. And it does seem like the spirit of what we wanted was let's get him in some pick and roll. Let's get him, let's run some actions for him to get the ball with an advantage ahead of steam. And that's really what they just started doing with the starters. And maybe that it helps that Kevin Love's been out, so there's a few more shots to go around. But mm-hmm. it's worth noting, it's not like he's getting a crazy number of shots up. He's just going from five or six shots to 10 or 11 shots. And
right. And I don't think it's a coincidence that everybody else looks a little bit better when he's getting touches, because this is a team that is starved for assists and playmaking. And to essentially scheme one of their players that is capable of doing that at a decent level out of the offense, I think that was part of why they struggled so much offensively.
Another thing that's interesting with him, and like I haven't quite figured out how to like put my finger on how to phrase this, but they don't have any wings on this team right now. And there is just a different energy that comes when a 6'8 guy is attacking the rim as compared to a 6'2 guy.
Oh, absolutely.
And you generate different angles, you generate different looks, you draw fouls, you just, the defense has to react different. I don't know how to say that in a way that doesn't make me sound like a moron, but and that's a pretty consistent problem for me, but like I just think that you start to see the offense look different when he's able to attack. And I think that's something that they need to continue to do, especially while he's the only wing size player that gets consistent minutes.
Yeah. Also, give my boy Alf a few more minutes, at least until Wendler comes back. I want to continue on the Jetty point, but it just made me think, my God, Ante Zizic sucks. He must really suck for him to finally be. Beilein had talked about, well, we don't want Larry out there without a center. We want to make sure that there's a center out there. They finally get a backup center for the first time all year. Zizic gets a few minutes, but they really are still keeping him out of the rotation because he sucks.
He's just not an NBA player. And you know, it's funny, we got yelled at by Zayvac last year, I remember, for being too hard on him. And oh, all these lineup numbers. And it's like, you just kind of know. And
the dude guys, sucks. And guys our boy's coming back though tomorrow, Carter. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting for Zizic. Like, I just think there's just this, there is a subset of big man, and I'm going to say European big men, who have good touch around the rim and are big. And so they kind of trick you in a way of like looking a little bit more confident than they are. Like, oh man, they can, you know, like, cause Zizic would clear out room around the hoop and hit some nice touch, soft jump hooks, but he doesn't have anything more than that. And good teams take that stuff away really easily. So he's just not probably going to be in the NBA next year, and that's okay. He was always going to be their third center, and the cavalry is coming in John Henson.
Yeah, John Henson expected to play tomorrow, which is fantastic news. Really looking forward to his return to the lineup. In terms of lineup discussion, I agree with you. I think it's, especially right now, we need to make sure that there are enough guys out there at all times that can handle the ball and create. And if I had to guess what the lineup is to close the season, I think it's still going to be Sexland. I think Dylan Windler is going to be the three. I think Jetty's still going to be getting really healthy minutes off the bench, and I think that can help the second unit. And then hopefully Love and Tristan are still a part of it. But I'm open to the possibility, because we talked about it before the season, and I said that I thought Kevin Porter Jr. had the second highest upside on the team behind Garland. Like, I think as a prospect, his ceiling is the second highest on the team. His floor is a little higher than I expected, and that's probably what has me excited. I love how hard he works. I love his attitude. I love that he's jumping up on the bench all the time. But the thing that I really enjoy about this is this seems to be a team of guys that really like playing together. Like, the young guys are genuinely excited whenever one of them has success. So if there are adjustments to be made at some point, I think that's going to go over a little bit easier as long as it's communicated properly and as long as those guys are still a significant part of the plan. And I think KPJ has earned a role on this team. And I think the three of them are going to have a consistent, meaningful role for the rest of this season and for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm pretty interested in how Windler fits into this and how Bailey.
I'm so excited for it, buddy. I'm so excited.
Well, it's good. He's about a week away and has been for the past 46 weeks. So you know, I just think in a couple weeks he might be a week away.
I'm just thinking of Summer League Windler slotted in as not the only creator. Like, he was basically in the LeBron role, and his shooting, like his ability to just pull, is so much damn fun. And I think this lineup is really, really missing a guy like that. So I'm with you too, that the way the Cavs talk about him and the way that Bayline talks about him has me really, really looking forward to the Dylan Windler experience.
And really, and this is like maybe I don't know if cynical is the right word, but really the value of adding Windler also is like, it's just another guy to pay attention to and be excited about when he comes onto the floor.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, and for us too, because if one of these guys is in a slump and the other one's playing well, we can just focus on that. And that's what the people want, Carter. I need my things to distract me. I need my shiny things, and Dylan Windler's another one.
Well, just think about how many minutes, you know, like, I mean, I don't know about you, but I have a tangible interest drop watching games when none of the trio of Sexton, Garland, Osman, or Porter, if I'm not seeing at least like two of those guys out there, mm-hmm. I'm like, well, I guess we're just going to wait till someone interesting checks in, you know? Yeah, like
we call that Twitter time.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I won't lie. I pay less attention. So, and you think of last year where you had so many Marquise Chris, Jaron Blossom game.
Yeah, I wasn't doing that, man. I was looking down at my phone at that point and just trying to make jokes, because, I mean, I need to keep my ability to be optimistic and upbeat, especially when you get into down Carter mode. I need to be able to play off that. Otherwise, it just makes for terrible podcast audio. So, well, no, those minutes, you just I know
they were tough on the soul.
I know, and, but, I know, you know, our guy Varden loved Blossom game, but we were not fans.
Yeah, I just think like ultimately what you're looking for is someone to root for and to be interested in, and like Windler provides that. Like, I don't know what kind of pro he's going to look like when he comes back, and obviously not the ideal start to the year coming back with that injury, but it's just going to be fun to see. And this team is getting close to healthy. You know, obviously we're waiting on Kevin Love to get back, and I think that back issue might linger a little bit.
Yeah, maybe.
But ultimately, like, having Henson out there, having Windler out there, playing all the young guys, it's just going to feel much more what they had in mind. And mm-hmm. I'm excited to see how it looks.
Yeah, before we wrap this up, I want to address a question here in the Twitch from GXD Billy. How do you feel that Garland is committed to that floater, which that was what he had said he's working on right now? It's the one really depressing thing for me, because I was watching the video that our buddy Spencer Davies, Spin Davies on Twitter, was tweeting out from practice, where he was working on his floater over length. And the one thing that jumped out to me immediately going into hashtag Coach Justin mode was the speed that he was doing those drills at was so poor. It was not a game speed, and that is the biggest issue, because he is rushing during games, and you are not going to be able to stroll into the lane and toss up a little floater. I also don't like that the form changes. Sometimes it's a half jump shot, sometimes it's a true floater. There is no real consistency to that. So maybe you have to do it at half speed to get more consistent form, and then you work your way up to doing it in game speed. But that's a really tough shot. And we've seen really talented offensive guards take a long time, like years, to add that to their game. So
I'm fine with it being in the toolbox. It just can't be the entire toolbox. In his last 8 games, Darius Garland has 6 free throw attempts.
Hey, that's up.
Yeah, that's not good. And I think really the floater just speaks to how weak he is, and how, you know, Cy in the chat just said finish through contact, coward. Mm-hmm. And while that's funny and I like it, I think that he can't finish through contact. He can't even get shots off through contact right now. He's just easily bullied. And in the short term, that's just not going to be the way he scores. That's why I'd actually rather, but I would just rather him be pulling from mid-range than working on floaters. You know, like I want floaters to be his last resort, not his second or third.
Yeah, it's a shame that his agent is Rich Paul and not an agent that has clients that, that seem like they have access to steroids, because he's someone that really just, he represents a lot of really skinny dudes. And I think we need to get Garland on that HGH plan there.
I mean, that would be nice, but in the short term, I'd be okay with just more pull-up shots. That's something that we're starting to see out of him a little more, and I just want it to keep happening. And I don't even care that much about the efficiency. It's more about getting that comfort as a shooter so you can have them, so you can start exploiting the gaps that the defense kind of gives you.
Yeah, I completely agree. And as I said before, I'm really interested to see what this improved three-point rate does to his overall game. He seems like he's getting confidence. And I mean, remember, even in preseason, like the shots he was taking in that one kind of outburst game and how well he was playing, he was playing with so much confidence. And I think that that's something we're going to see more. When I think he's someone that when his shot is falling, everything else kind of falls into place, because he is a very talented player and he just wasn't playing with confidence before. So I'm really hoping to see that being the change, a consistent change over these next couple weeks.
Couldn't agree more, my friend.
All right. That seems like a great place to wrap this up. Thanks again, Carter. And big thanks to our buddy Trevor. Make sure, if you're not following him on Twitter already, it's absurd that this guy is not like hired by a team or some big organization, but follow him at Illegal Screens. Big shout out to our boy Trevor. Go support him. And if you want to support the podcast, we got many ways to do so. You can subscribe to our Twitch or to our Chase Down premium feed at bluewirepods.com/the-chase-down-premium, aka the dash,
or just Google it,
or Google Chase Down Premium. That also works. You can find us on Twitch at twitch.tv/chasedownpod. Subscribe there. Throw that little Amazon subscription on there. We love that. If you want to support us the old school way, you can do so by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of our Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. No matter how you choose to support us, we really do appreciate your support. It means the absolute world to us. So thanks again to all of our listeners. Thanks to Carter. And until next time, go Cavs.